Good morning. Thank you for joining us for a little bit clean tech review with the Baird folks here. I'm going to go ahead. This is Michael Horowitz. I'm going to go ahead and introduce our team, and we'll run through some thoughts from each of the team members. As many of you know, we just had our first annual clean technology conference here at Baird, where we had over 80 public and private companies across all subsectors of clean technology presenting their stories. It was very well attended, and I think my initial reaction is sentiment in the group seems to be getting better here at the end of 2010 after a couple challenging years. But why don't I go ahead and introduce who we have in the room. Again, I'm Michael Horowitz. I run the Clean Technology Research Group here at Robert Baird. I joined the firm about 18 months ago. Previously, I was at a couple other boutique investment banks, the Stanford Group and Pacific Growth Equities prior to that. Over the last 15 years, I've done industrial and energy research and portfolio management. Prior to being at various investment banks, I was a portfolio manager for a couple large hedge funds here in San Francisco. With me, we also have Christine Tizak. She heads up our policy research for energy and environmental issues. She's based in Washington, D.C. Christy also joined with myself about 18 months ago. She was previously Senior Vice President for the Electricity, Natural Gas, and Environmental Policy Research at the Stanford Group with me as well. She was also a research associate at HSBC Securities and Washington Analysis Corporation, covering the water industry prior to that. Christine, as you can see, has a BA in Russian language from Boston College and an MBA in finance from George Washington. And you will soon hear from her on how she views the policy outlook. And lastly, and then I'll turn it over to Gary Volin, who runs the Clean Technology Investment Banking Group here at Baird, also joined with us 18 months ago. Prior to that, Gary was with myself at the Stanford Group and Pacific Growth Equities, where he had similar roles running the clean technology banking teams at those firms. Previously, he was a managing director and head of technology investment. Previously he was the managing director at J.P. Morgan, and prior to that, the head of the Applied Technology Group at Hambrickson Quest. So with that, that's the three of us in the room here, and I'll let Gary kick into a little overview of Baird.
Great. Thanks, Michael. I'm going to flip to the third slide here for a little bit of an overview. I did want to give you a little bit of background on Baird. For those of you that may not know us very well, we've been, I think, probably unquestionably one of the fastest growing investment banks and middle market firms or any firm here in the U.S. And just to give you a couple quick highlights, I think over the last 2 years, Baird, which today has about 250 employees globally, 250 of those are senior hires throughout the organization. Baird's done, a tremendous job of capitalizing on the dislocation in the broader financial services sectors and hiring a number of teams to allow us to build the practice. And as you'll see on this chart, north of $700 million in revenues last year. That'll be probably closer to $800 million this year as we continue to grow. Importantly, the firm has been profitable every month except for October of 1987. And so that's what's allowed us to grow in the financial downturn is the fact that we build our business very, very profitably. In 2004, we became employee-owned when we bought the firm back from Northwestern Mutual Life. And I think having a privately held employee-owned investment bank has been a key driver in our ability to attract talent and build the business. We are an international middle market firm. We probably have the largest middle market investment banking practice in Europe with about 35 bankers in the UK and in Germany. And just over 2 years ago, we opened up our banking effort in Asia, headquartered out of Shanghai, but with satellite offices throughout the region, throughout China, really. And I think importantly from this firm's perspective, we've been on the Fortune list of the top 100 places to work for 7 straight years, which again has allowed us to attract talent for people who want to work with people that that are good to work for and with. Flipping to the next slide, some of this is represented in the growth that we've seen on the equity research, sales, and trading side. We now cover close to 650 companies on our research. department, I think, is approaching close to 140 people. On the sales and trading side, we've also continued to grow our sales and trading revenue consistently now, I think, for 15 straight years. And this year will also be growth, although slightly more modest than it's been in the last couple of years, just because volume slowed this year. But again, continued revenue growth on that side of the business. On the investment banking side, the firm for many years, I think, has been very well known for its M&A practice, and in particular in sectors like industrials, services. But I think importantly, a couple highlights I'd make, one of which is on that M&A side, we do a significant amount of our business internationally with our European and Asian colleagues. Probably north, close to 25-30% of our M&A transactions are cross-border, and that business continues to grow. Also worth noting on the capital market side, we continue to have significant growth on our IPO business. This year, we're among the top 10 IPO underwriters of any U.S.-based investment bank, and we expect our rankings in that regard to continue to grow as we continue to build, in particular, the growth areas of this firm, like technology, healthcare, and obviously clean tech. And with that, I think I will let Christy give us a little bit of overview on what's going on in Washington.
Well, thank you, Gary. Certainly the last couple of days have been incredibly interesting. One of the client takeaways that was shared with me at the clean tech conference was how interesting it was that we were meeting while the global effort on climate change was underway in Cancun, and not a single single presenter mentioned that, which I think is indicative of how much the world has changed probably in the last 2 years, and even in the last 12 months since Copenhagen. Certainly looking ahead into the next several weeks, we published this morning that it is incrementally positive for the renewable energy and clean tech sectors that we are seeing some movement on expired and expiring tax credits through the introduction of a new draft from Senate Finance Committee Chairman Max Baucus, who is including key programs such as a one-year extension of the 1603 cash grant program, an expansion of the Section 48C manufacturing credit for renewable energy and energy efficiency projects. That's a continuation of a program that was begun in the 2009 stimulus. And these program extensions being included in this bill, which also addresses the 2001-2003 tax cuts, is very important once they're done having their political votes this week on the Hill, because putting them together is probably the only way they'll get done before year end. So that was something that several presenting companies mentioned as something they hoped they would see come together, particularly those companies in the solar space, that the 1603 cash grant program would indeed get done this year. So we'll be watching that carefully. Because as we move into the 112th Congress, certainly there's going to be incredible pressure on the new Republican leadership in the House to provide more fiscal stewardship, and that means to make sure that they offset any continuation of tax incentives, and the environment for moving forward on new tax programs is certainly going to be more challenging. I still anticipate, whether it's in the tax extension package under consideration now or when we get back to taxes next spring, that if we do get the environment and energy efficiency tax credits addressed, then they will likely come at the expense of some changes to the tax preferences enjoyed by the oil and natural gas sector. There is a possibility that they could be narrow enough to only impact the majors, but I do think that this is something that folks need to keep in mind that has not quite come off the table. The other thing shaping the regulatory outlook for business and is coming from a regulatory perspective, particularly for the power industry. The Environmental Protection Agency will be coming out with final as well as new proposed air pollution rules, coal ash rules, and perhaps a cooling tower rule in the spring of 2011. This is anticipated to force retirements of coal-fired power plants, opening the door for more natural gas-fired capacity, as well as renewable energy and alternative fuels to have greater participation in the electricity portfolio of the country. Moving forward, the change in the leadership in the House Energy Committee will likely cause a lot of oversight hearings, and we'll move to the next slide, please. The Republicans, I don't think, will be able to undo everything that the current administration and the Democratic majority to date have put into play. There is enough going on at state levels to keep Republicans interested in job-oriented legislation and regulation. But I think that one thing we could see is energy slide off Congress's radar screen as they focus more on health care reform and changes to the financial reform legislation that was underway, that got passed this year. One of the places that we think we could see a discussion around energy where we could see the Congress actually make a little progress would be moving away from discussions of utility regulation and renewable power and perhaps moving more aggressively into a discussion of natural gas vehicle incentives, biofuels, and electric vehicles. I think that there's a possibility that there's some agreement there where folks could rally around it, and it's not quite as politically charged as changes to regulation of the power industry is. So I'll leave that there for now and pass it back to Michael.
Great. Thanks, Christy. So I'm going to go ahead and review how we view the clean technology world from a fundamental research perspective. In my group, we do cover stocks across all the subsectors of clean technology, whether it's solar, wind, geothermal, energy storage, water, the smart grid, energy efficiency. It's quite a broad group. Over the last couple of years, of course, the macroeconomic situation globally has had a profound effect on the clean technology sector. I think there's some good things that will come out of some of the challenges that we've gone through, but it's important to understand what they were. And clean technology, broadly speaking, has substantial capital requirements to get these new technologies and new projects online. And, of course, that would portend to the cost of capital being quite important in the clean technology sector. I would say if there was one macroeconomic factor that we worry about, it's the availability of capital to get some of these programs and some of these projects off the ground. So that slowed some given the global crisis, but what it also did is it caused investors and companies to reevaluate how they're going to bring some of these technologies to market. They're being more efficient with their capital, and I think that in the end, that will speak to better profitability for the group. But it's been a challenge over the last couple of years. Clean technology is a very global sector, different than possibly some of the other sectors that Baird covers. I would say that many of the companies that we follow are operating in many countries globally. Asia's obviously very important. Europe was probably the real world leader 6 or 7 years ago within clean technology. And I would say just really in the last couple of years has the U.S. Started to develop some projects and launch some programs of their own. But a quite global situation. The other big macroeconomic factor that we've been following is some of the issues around commodity pricing. I think many people have noticed that oil has actually held up and been quite resilient in terms of price. But more important to the clean technology sector, certainly here in the U.S., are natural gas prices. Natural gas prices dictate electricity prices here in the U.S. for the most part, certainly the marginal price of electricity, which then factors into the economic viability of many of these new technologies within renewables. And it also affects the ability to get some of these projects up and running and financed. So now with that said, natural gas being depressed now for about 2 years, it hasn't slowed the sector maybe as much as I would have thought. And that's where policy has acted as somewhat of a buffer against that negative price factor. The last thing that I would mention on the macroeconomic front is we still do deal with subsidy programs across all subsectors of clean technology. I think the most notable subsidies globally have been around the wind and solar sectors. And when you do have governments deciding policy and changing policy as we've had over the last couple of years across the wind and solar sectors, it creates volatility not only in the stocks that we cover, but some volatility in the business models and how these companies approach the market. I do think though the subsidy programs have helped jumpstart industry in various countries and jumpstart markets. The solar market, for instance, in Italy has been very strong this year, and that has been helped by some of the government mandates. So these subsidies do have a place to jumpstart industry, and over time we expect them to disappear, and companies are prepared for that and will prepare the economics of their businesses for you know, certainly the end of subsidies over time. If we flip to the next slide, there's a couple key themes that we're going to be looking at in 2011, and when we have Q&A, we could jump into this more deeply. But really, 2011 will be the year to liquefy for many of the private companies that we follow. And what I mean by that is we're likely to see a healthy mix between M&A activity as large multinational companies look to establish businesses within the clean technology area, and other companies will have the business prospects where we think we'll see some pretty interesting IPOs in 2011. The two sectors that we're going to be most focused on in 2011 for some of this activity and for some success will be the solar and smart grid areas. You will probably have seen over the last couple months there's been quite a bit of negativity around the solar sector going into 2011. We think that that's overblown. 2010 has been a banner year for solar, and in fact, demand for solar in 2010 is more than double what it was in 2009. What we find interesting is most industry analysts have been caught completely off guard by that type of growth. There was some negativity going into the 2010 period in solar, so it's very similar to some of the things we're hearing from folks now. What I would remind everybody about the solar industry, really a couple things. You know, number one, there still are substantial government programs globally that allow for the solar business to continue to have very high volumes in 2011. Won't be the same kind of growth that we saw in 2010, but certainly a very substantial market across Germany, Italy, the U.S., Japan's opening up. So we've got quite a bit of exciting things going on there from a market perspective. But I think most importantly, and the thing that people seem to miss, the solar sector continues to bring their costs down and lower their price. So the installed cost of solar has come down substantially, more than 50% over the last couple of years. What that does is opens up new markets where solar can be competitive. And this is a very elastic market. The elasticity of demand in the energy markets has always been fairly steep. As energy prices come down, demand picks up substantially. In the clean energy, I would say it's almost vertical, the elasticity function. So as prices have come down across multiple markets in the solar industry, we've seen demand pick up, and I still think that we will have those opportunities ahead of us in 2011. So we are not nearly as bearish as some other folks going into the 2011 timeframe. But we are, I would say, focused more on the U.S. solar companies than the Chinese solar companies. 2010 was the year for Chinese solar companies. Their business models are really about making it, you know, a cheap solar panel and selling it out into the marketplace, and it's a fairly simple business model. I think in 2011, as the U.S. market opens up and large projects become more important to the growth of the solar industry, companies like SunPower, First Solar, MEMC Materials, these companies all have substantial downstream activities in the solar business, and that is to say that they're out there developing and constructing their own projects, and they're opening up markets and stimulating demand with those or with that part of their organization. And we think that will be very important, combining the technology capabilities that those companies have with now their engineering, construction, and development activities. And that really sets them apart from the Chinese players. So we'll be more focused on those U.S. companies going into 2011 in solar. if we move on to the smart grid area quickly, another an important large area for the clean technology sector. We are going to be more focused on what we'll call the application layer of the smart grid. For those of you, just a quick review, you know, the idea of the smart grid is to allow utilities to better manage the way they deliver electrons to their customers. And on the flip side, for the consumer, the smart grid is about allowing the consumer to have a more affordable and efficient electricity from their provider, from their utility. And what we'll be focused on is the companies that are on the application layer, allowing utilities to develop new business models that then allow their consumers to take advantage of getting their energy more cheaply and from more renewable sources like solar and wind. We have seen quite a bit of growth within the traditional metering companies, companies like iTron and Elster, companies like Silver Spring, which is a highly regarded private company. These companies have had quite a bit of success in 2009 and 10 as utilities have been launching these large smart metering initiatives. And we think that will still be important, but we also think that these companies and other companies, to include the mega caps like a Microsoft, an Oracle, a Cisco, a Google, Accenture, IBM, they'll be coming into the market now to take advantage of some of the infrastructure that has been built out and to now layer on applications that the utility and the consumer can then use. So first we build out the infrastructure layer, the hardware layer, and now we'll watch new business models emerge in the application layer, and that's what we'll be focused on. And recently, just last week, we initiated coverage on a company called Echelon, which we think has a unique offering on that application layer, and so you'll see us more focused there in the years to come. With that said, we'll turn it over to Gary Volin for a little bit of a banking outlook.
Thanks, Michael. I think real quickly we'll walk through a little bit on our expectations for 2011, and I guess I'll start with a comment that Michael made in the beginning. I think we did just come through a very successful two-day conference with 83 companies. Probably 40% of those were private companies, and the balance were public. And importantly, I do think that the general tone of the room and the tone we were hearing from investors would imply that we are looking forward to 2011 and having an opportunity to, on the banking side, to see a lot more activity. We do believe that the clean tech IPO market will gain momentum this year. Obviously, the last, you know, broadly speaking, the last couple of years have been very tough for the IPO markets in general. Clean tech has been no exception and arguably suffered even worse, and I'll quickly look at a couple slides to support that. But we did start to see the uptick in activity in the broader markets and in clean tech starting after Labor Day. And we really do believe, in part because of what's gone on the last couple of years, there really is a pent-up supply of really high-quality private clean tech companies that will likely try and test the IPO markets in 2011, barring any sort of major macro problems with the markets. Flipping to page 12 is really just designed to address quickly my comments that clean tech has suffered a little more than most. As you can see from these various indices, broad market indices going back to the beginning of 2008, most of the broader markets have really recovered most of their losses over the last couple of years. The clean tech sector, evidenced by, it's orange on my page, but the orange bar at the bottom of the screen tells you that there's still some room for recovery in clean tech. And again, I do think we've seen some of that, but it has been in part the reason why a lot of those really high quality private companies have chosen to wait for a potential IPO until markets improve. I'm now going to flip over to the to a slide on the equity mutual funds flow, which is slide 13. And I think the thing I'd like to highlight for you here is, as we talk about the overall decline in IPO activity and opportunity, you can see we at the beginning of this year in the first part of 2010, we saw some improvement in some IPO activity. We saw that equity flows into mutual funds, which is a big indicator for the IPO market. We're moving up, and then when the flash crash hit, everything went negative, and money was flowing out of these mutual funds, which really makes the IPO market a very challenging environment. if you look at these last 6 weeks, obviously this is really kind of going back to more or less right around Labor Day, we've seen the uptick in the funds flows into the equity funds, which is going to be driving our IPO market both now and hopefully into 2011. Flipping again to page 14 for a little bit of an IPO market review of what's gone on. Again, I think what you'll see on the left side here is where these deals have priced, and you're seeing some definite modest improvement in deals coming at or above the range across the board. I will point out that the two most recent clean tech IPOs, which were Elster and Amyris, in sort of the second half of September, did not price above or at the range, which was really, I think, a reflection of the chart I just showed, showing the underperformance of the sector. Importantly, they have both performed very well in the aftermarket, and I think it is, again, a good indication for 2011. And on the right side, you can see the broader numbers of IPOs that have been pricing over the months. I think important to note that given our last sort of really strong IPO market was 06, 07, and you can see the October-November trades were above monthly averages for those 2 years for the first time in over a year. A little bit more detail on clean tech IPOs on page 15. We've listed the tombstones for you know about 10 of the IPOs that have taken place, really starting with A123's IPO in late 2009. And I think, again, as you see, the earlier transactions like A123 and Codexis are still trying to fight their way back to their IPO prices, not necessarily a reflection on their businesses, but again, facing a tougher market in general. But importantly, the deals that have gotten done lately, to include, you know, Tesla, certainly closer to early this year, but as I mentioned, Elster and Amyris, just a couple months back, both showing, you know, 20 to 25% upticks from their IPO price, is going to give investors a lot more confidence to invest in the next set of deals that are coming through. Page 16, I want to flip for just a minute and talk about clean tech venture capital activity. The venture investment activity has actually remained relatively strong throughout this downturn cycle. There's still a lot of clean tech venture capital money out there to be deployed. We actually believe investment will continue to increase on the venture side. To Michael's point earlier, you know, the real issue and the hesitation tends to be around for heavy capital intensive projects that aren't really appropriate for a lot of venture funds. Those sectors will be a little bit more difficult to fund unless they have good strategic partners to get it done. So we will see things more active, I think, in some of the less capital-intensive businesses like energy efficiency and smart grid. But that gives you a sense of where we are and where we believe we're heading on the venture side. Next slide is on the clean tech M&A activity. And although the third quarter was down a little bit, M&A activity is increasing. We believe it will continue to increase. Again, to echo Michael's comments, our general belief is that a lot of, in particular, venture-backed companies will be starting to look for liquidity in 2011 and into 2012. If the IPO market's there for those companies, they will probably go after it. But for a lot of these companies, they just, you know, they haven't really gotten to that level of performance or size. And there is increased interest among a lot of the both traditional industrial and the newer emerging clean tech companies to acquire additional technologies and capabilities. And so we do have a strong belief that the M&A market will continue to show signs of growth. And then my last slide here is really just sort of giving a sense of where those clean tech buyers are coming from. As I mentioned, we've seen, you know, in the clean tech sector, a lot of the activity has been largely around smart grid energy efficiency and solar. We actually think those will continue to be the two most prominent sectors. The utilities and the IPPs, we show here have all been aggressive partners, buyers, investors in a variety of clean tech companies and expect that to continue. And the industrial side is actually probably the biggest opportunity in many ways for a lot of the activity. There's a lot of really strong, great companies here that have not only been looking at making acquisitions, have made acquisitions, and have even made partnerships and equity minority investments in a lot of these companies as well. And as Michael referenced in his slide, the big technology providers are clearly very active in building their presence in this sector. So we see a lot of opportunities on the M&A side as well. And I think my final takeaway was we're really looking forward to 2011 and seeing this sector finally start to achieve some of the results that I think a lot of us have been waiting for.
Great. So this is Michael again. With that said,
We certainly have time for questions, and we can run through any topics that anybody on the line or here in the room would like to pursue.